I want to address a subject, and I will call it the injustice of social justice. This is a subject that is so much relevant and upon which the Scriptures are not silent. And I have not said much at all from the pulpit about it, but I want to address it here at this time. I'm usually a late comer to these things. It takes me a while to digest and sort through and understand, but I think this rises to the level of being worthy of addressing here in this way. I want to begin by reading Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 8. It says, "If thou seest the oppression of the poor, and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, marvel not at the matter. For he that is higher than the highest regardeth, and there be higher than they." I am indebted to many different sources for my thinking and understanding of this subject thus far. And I guess what really pushed me over the edge was an address, kind of an extra address, that one of the brethren gave in the meeting in Springfield, Missouri that I attended earlier or in the week past. We must think biblically on all subjects and apply the Word of God to the times in which we live. And presently, our world is being shaken by a phenomenon known as the social justice movement. And it's not only the world in general, it's not only the lost world that is being shaken. The religious world is being shaken. Religious societies and denominations and seminaries are being shaken by the social justice movement. And this movement ultimately is nothing new. It is a clever repackaging of the same old lies that have been told since the Garden of Eden. Let me first address just the terminology here of social justice. Justice is to be distinguished from social justice. Two entirely different things. Justice is a good thing, because justice is of God. God is just. He rules with justice, which we might define simply as the fair and impartial application of the law. A synonym for justice is equity or equitableness, equality before the law. That is justice. In the symbol for justice that we have had here in our nation for many years, it is a lady holding a set of balances in her hands. Is there something else? Is there a sword in one hand? Anyway, a set of balances in a hand, I'm sure, with a blindfold over her eyes to show the impartiality of justice. That's how it ought to be. And that is what the Scriptures do set forth. We believe in justice, because justice is of God. But the moment that you put the adjective social in front of justice, it changes the definition altogether. Social justice may be defined as the taking the steps necessary to produce equality of outcomes. Not just equal opportunity, but equal outcome. In other words, in social justice, well, let me just say this. Social justice has nothing to do with real justice. It is a misappropriation of the term justice. In social justice, so-called, everyone has a right to the same outcome as others. Everyone is entitled to the same outcome. It has, therefore, nothing to do with true biblical justice. Social justice is simply a more benign name for socialism. And socialism, practically speaking, is the control of an economy or of socioeconomic factors at all levels by the government, rather than by free enterprise. And even a secular dictionary on my computer has this explanation for socialism. In Marxist theory, socialism is a transitional social state between the overthrow of capitalism and the realization of communism. End quote. And that's a surprisingly honest admission. Except it misuses the term capitalism, and without going into the details, I'm not an economist, but I do know this, that all economies must have capital and operate with capital. The question is not really one of capitalism versus communism or capitalism versus socialism. The question is, who holds the capital? Who holds the wealth? Who controls it? Is it the government that holds and controls and redistributes? Or ultimately, is it God in His providence? Social justice is simply a new name for the redistribution of wealth or capital under the guise of giving advantage to the disadvantaged. And one of our former presidents from nearly 100 years ago, Mr. Franklin Roosevelt, made this statement, and this is almost verbatim. It may not be exactly this, but it was very close to this. We want to take from those who have and give it to the have-nots who need it so much. That's the argument for the government redistribution of wealth, which is really a foundation stone of socialism. Well, you can see how important it is to own the terms and to define the terms and to make the phrases in your favor. They say that whoever controls the language controls the debate Or I think some say he who controls the language wins the debate. And by framing these issues under the title of social justice, they've already gained an advantage. Because how could anyone be against justice that is administered socially? If you say, I'm against social justice, you sound like you're some kind of outlaw. Sounds like you're promoting injustice. And it's the same with the phrase, Black Lives Matter. If you say anything contrary to that, then you are assumed, or you are painted out to be taking a position that black lives don't matter. Even if you say all lives matter, that's not enough. You are an enemy, or you are perceived as an enemy to those who are black. Well, of course, biblically, all lives matter, and all lives matter equally. Even unborn lives matter. And we should bring that into the discussion in these days. Well, I'll say more about the Black Lives Matters in a moment. Social justice is one of the branches, or we might say one of the faces, of what is called critical theory. And critical theory is kind of a nondescript name given to a movement and a philosophy that challenges power structures in society, and particularly in Western society. Critical theory, and there's various forms of it, critical race theory, critical economic theory, and so on. But it all comes under the category of critical theory. This came out of a movement in the 1930s that's called the Frankfurt School. It was a group of economists, philosophers, educators, and so on that were gathered at a university there in Frankfurt, Germany, who supposedly were finding a new foundation that was neither capitalist nor fascist nor Marxist, but was a new direction. It was going to correct all of these previous errors. What it really amounted to, honestly, was simply a repackaging of Marxism. That's what the Frankfurt School is all about. They claimed to iron out the rough spots, but what they ended up with was just a new form of Marxism, and not really that new. It was, again, a repackaging and a reselling of Marxism. Some would call it neo-Marxism, taken, of course, from the unbiblical and evil teachings of Karl Marx. Incidentally, I just recently read an article telling about are contrasting Karl Marx and C.H. Spurgeon. They lived at the same time And in the same city for many years, London, England. And in some ways, they were in competition for the souls of men. Mr. Spurgeon's gospel was a source of frustration to Karl Marx because it was a hindrance to the advance of his philosophies. And so, you know, we think there's that this is a new conflict. Well, it goes back that far at least. I don't know that the two men ever met. As far as I know, they did not. But they were certainly aware of one another and in some ways seemed to address one another. Well, the life of Karl Marx and the writings and the philosophy are just absolutely evil. Just pure evil. If you'd been a dispensationalist at that time, you would have said he's the Antichrist. Getting back here to critical theory, which is just part of neo-Marxism. Critical theory sees everything in society through the lens of power structures. Everyone is either an oppressed person or an oppressor. There's no in between. You are either weak or powerful, either oppressed or oppressor. And it divides society according to these power structures. Let me give some examples as applied over time and even up to today. There are women and there are men. Women are the oppressed. Men are the oppressors, according to critical theory. Economically speaking, the poor are the oppressed, and I think what we can honestly call the middle class is considered as the oppressors. Racially speaking, minorities are the oppressed, and the white majority are the oppressors. Religiously, the lines are drawn the same way. Religious minorities, Jews, Muslims, and so on, are the oppressed. The Christian majority is the oppressor. And of course, to bring it up to date, the LGBTQ plus crowd are the oppressed. And those who live according to biblical morality are the oppressors. So these are at least five different categories, and there could probably be more added, but that's enough to for us today. Each one of these five is like a layer. And the more layers that you are involved in, the more you are oppressed. For example, if you're a woman, you're oppressed. But if you're a poor woman, you're even more oppressed. And if you are a poor woman who is not white, you're even more oppressed. And this layering is called intersectionality. You hear that term. That's all that it refers to. You have these, the intersections then of these different levels of oppression. And so, a lesbian, black, Muslim, poor woman is at the very bottom of the pole, so to speak. The most oppressed of anyone in society. The weakest and most vulnerable. And if you are a white Christian, I hate to use the word straight, but I'll use it in this context, middle class man, you are the worst offender. You are the worst and most unjust member of society, the most oppressing and oppressive member of society. According to this concept of intersectionality and critical theory, character means nothing. Godliness means nothing. This is a purely atheistic approach to life. It is an atheistic view of the whole world. It is particularly an anti-biblical and anti-Christian perspective. Well, unfortunately, some in religion have integrated or made a synthesis of what they consider Christianity with critical theory. And of course, this is nothing new. It is called liberation theology. It is the teaching that liberating the oppressed is what the Scriptures give us to do. Improving the life of the weak upon this earth is the cause of religion. And this again is kind of a spin-off of the Frankfurt School and the critical theory. It's just putting a Christian glaze over top. It has been followed throughout Latin America, and has condoned violence of all kinds in order to bring justice, supposedly, and liberation to the oppressed. And of course, the question that has to be asked is, when the advocates of social justice and critical theory resort to violence and even war, as they have done again and again, and as they're doing today in the streets of some of our cities, of our country, the question is, who then is the oppressor? They who claim to be the oppressed become the oppressors and contradict their own position. Now, let me move on here. Let me mention two front groups for social justice. First is the Black Lives Matter movement. If you do even minimal research on this, you will find that it is a communist-founded and communist-funded organization. And they do not try to hide that. They put that out front. I had heard several different reports of men who had gone to the BLM website, the official website, and they quoted statements, very strong and direct statements, against marriage, against biblical marriage and the biblical concept of family, and so on. And I took a little time kicking around that website myself, and I couldn't find those explicit statements. And so I wonder if they have not taken them down or they've hidden them someplace where they can't be found anymore. But let me just give a few quotations of what I did find from the BLM official website. Our mission is to eradicate white supremacy. And of course, that is a code for white lives don't matter. It's only black lives that matter to them. But listen, it gets worse. I mean, that's maybe open to interpretation, but this is not. We affirm the lives of black, queer, and trans folks, and they include in that, see, they're the oppressed. And here's another layer of oppression. Here's more intersectionality. Disabled folks, undocumented folks, folks with records. In other words, if you are a criminal, you're one of the oppressed. The reverse of the reality. Anyway, we affirm, and this is a big long list here, women and all black lives along the gender spectrum. You see, as much as anything, the BLM movement is a sodomite movement. And they're using race as a tool to push a sodomite agenda. Again, they say on their website, black liberation movements in this country have created room, space, and leadership mostly for black, heterosexual, cisgender men. Cisgender just means men who identify as men. Leaving women, queer and transgender people, and others either out of the movement or in the background to move the work forward with little or no recognition. As a network, we have always recognized the need to center the leadership of women and queer and trans people. So again, that's their agenda. And they say, we deserve more than what we have been given. There's the entitlement mentality. Everything should be handed to us on a platter. There is, secondly, another front group for social justice, and that is a group that calls itself Antifa. They are supposedly opposing fascism. That's Antifa is abbreviation for that, anti-fascist. And again, according to a secular dictionary, the term fascism was first used of the totalitarian nationalist regime of Mussolini in Italy. It goes on to say, fascism tends to include a belief in the supremacy of one national or ethnic group, a contempt for democracy, and insistence on obedience to a powerful leader. So for whatever it's worth, that's the definition of fascism that people are using, and that's what this movement or this branch of social justice called Antifa claims to be opposing. It's very interesting, of course, to notice the common link that both the BLM and Antifa have, as far as emphasis on racism is concerned. And they define racism according to their liking. It's really a redefinition of the term. We hear now about what is called systemic racism. Systemic racism means that if you are born white, you are automatically a racist by default. It is a position that you inherit by birth. Even if you do not participate in racism in any way and do not display racism in any way, you are guilty of systemic racism, or you are a contributor to racism in the whole system of society just by virtue of being born. And all white people are guilty of what are called microaggressions, even if they are unaware of it, and even if those offenses, whatever they are unintended. On the other hand, if you're born black, you are automatically oppressed. It is assumed that you are treated unjustly. You inherit a position of being treated unjustly. And, you know, some who are outspoken in these movements are even saying that whites are inferior and should be removed from the earth. And yet they accuse us of racism systemically. It's reverse racism. It's reverse discrimination. But all of this emphasis upon races, and let me just say this parenthetically. Again, that's a wrong term, a wrong use of a term. There's one race. There is only one. Well, there's two races. There's the race of angels and the race of mankind. And in the race of mankind, there are nations, there are ethnicities, but one race. So I don't even like to use the term race in an unbiblical context. But all of this emphasis on race and the conflicts between people of different colors is a promoting of division, a promoting of class warfare, which plays right into the hands of classical Marxism. In fact, Karl Marx had a term for people like BLM and Antifa. He called them useful idiots. They are helpers to a cause that they don't even understand. Well, maybe some of them do, but probably a lot of them don't. And when Marxists have gained control of a society, they will have no more use for the BLM and the Antifa people. They were useful idiots to help them come to power, and then they will destroy them just like everyone else. And you see the roots of this that are so anti-Christian and anti-biblical and devilish. It's the human race in conflict with itself and destroying itself. And notice I said the human race. It's only one. We might say that Marxism is just one of many efforts over time to build the Tower of Babel or to rebuild what God tore down there at Babel, to try to make an earthly utopia without God and without His Word. Groups like BLM and Antifa take the position that Western civilization was built on oppression and was built by oppression and is the source of all oppression in the world today. Therefore, Western civilization must be dismantled. And that dismantling begins with the destruction of emblems of oppression, things like statues and monuments. We are witnessing what is called the cancel culture, in which anyone considered to be an oppressor or from the oppressor class in history is erased from history. And anyone living now who is of the so-called oppressor class is ignored, is shut down, is not given a platform on which to speak, is shut out of news reports, is shut out of social media accounts, and so on. And because they say racism is systemic, the whole system must be destroyed. I saw yesterday, I think it was, that some are even threatening to burn, is it the building that Congress meets in or something? If the deceased Ms. Ginsburg is replaced on the Supreme Court. Well, we're out of time here and I haven't finished all my material. But let me just take a few more minutes here and try to wrap up. The social justice movement condones violence to get their message heard and their agenda enacted. They have redefined morality so that crime committed by the oppressed ones is no longer crime. It's simply making their voices heard. And on the other hand, law enforcement by those who are considered the oppressor class is actually criminal aggression. All dissenting voices must be silenced, and they accomplish that with the help of leftist media and social media platforms. And they have had the help ever since the 1930s, at least, of dumbing down education and advancing Marxism in university classrooms. Now, let me just say a word about why I'm concerned about all of this. This is making a huge impact upon churches or religious societies. Last year, the Southern Baptist Convention took a huge step in passing a resolution that declared that critical race theory and intersectionality are, quote, analytical tools that can aid in evaluating a variety of human experiences. I put an article out there a couple of weeks ago that made some reference to that. That's just a capitulation to Marxist philosophy. Some of the leaders in that convention are even calling social justice a gospel issue. In other words, if you're not on board with the social justice movement, then you're denying the gospel. Well, I agree. It is a gospel issue, but it's the other way around. If you're on board with the so-called social justice movement, you're the one that's denying the gospel. The Presbyterian Church in America denomination held a conference a couple of years ago that promoted a rethinking of sodomy, that promoted a compromise of biblical morality, and other groups have done the same. And I believe it's important that as a church, we know what we believe and why, and we do not compromise on biblical morality and biblical justice. Now, one last thought here. Some have accused Christians in general of not having an answer to the social problems of today. They put forth their social justice movement and they say, what do you have that answers the problems? Well, we have the scriptures, in fact. God speaks against oppression, especially oppression of widows and orphans. But on the other hand, Jesus told us that we will have the poor with us always. Jesus told us not to expect equal outcomes, in other words. And God does not mandate equal outcomes for all members of society. The scriptures do teach us to be benevolent. But that benevolence is voluntary, and it is not coerced by government. It is not enacted by government agencies redistributing wealth. God in His Word addresses the issues relating to masters and servants or slaves. More broadly, the scriptures teach us to be content with what God gives. John the Baptist taught the people, to the soldiers, be content with your wages. In other words, recognize the sovereignty of God in all of your life, His guiding hand in all events. And that's so different than the social justice movement today that recognizes the sovereignty of government in all of life and the hand of government guiding all events. Government is the new God in social justice theory. And it presents a false gospel. True injustice and oppression is wrong. And we do see all manner of injustice in this world. You study any subject very much and you're going to see so much deception and dishonesty and conspiracy. It's sickening. But that is the fruit of sin. That's what happened to this world, to the human race, when Adam fell. It's to be expected. This verse in Ecclesiastes is so relevant. If thou seest the oppression of the poor and violent perverting of judgment and justice in a province, go and burn down a city block. No, it says, marvel not at the matter. Don't be surprised. That's just a manifestation of the depravity of the hearts of men. But the verse goes on to say, remember that there is a God in heaven. And the implication here is that He will render justice one day. He that is higher than the highest regardeth. And He is higher than these oppressors in society. When Christ comes, there will be the perfect administration of justice. All wrongs will be made right. The Christian answer to the social problems is, in fact, redemption. Not reparation, but redemption. Individual salvation that affects society at a grassroots level. Redemption gives us a heart to love our neighbor as ourselves, to do to the neighbor as you'd have him do unto you. Social justice, so-called, is simply injustice in disguise. There's no gospel, there's no repentance, there's no forgiveness. There will never be enough equality to satisfy those who are claiming and demanding social justice. So, there's nothing new under the sun. And we should not be preoccupied with all this in a sense. I don't want to be ignorant of it, but nothing has really substantially changed. Our mission in this world as a church and as individual believers is the same as it's always been. So may God give us grace to live, to think as we should.